Here we go. Coming to you, Gary, in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Gary and Kenny Show. I'm Gary Kroger in Waterloo, Iowa, where it's very cold and very icy. And I am joined, as always, by
Ken Sizer in Calabasas, where, as always, it's sunny. It's kind of cold.
It's always kind of nice, right?
Well, it's supposed to. We're expecting weather.
What
Everybody's
does that
all
mean?
Excited. We're going to get weather.
What is weather? Anything?
Well, it's
the weather to us means that there's 6 inches of snow and an ice storm. Weather to you is what? The difference between 65 and 67?
Something like that. But when you live out here a long time, you can kind of get sensitive to it. But enough about the weather. Let's talk about what we usually talk about, which is what ailments we have this week and what bothers you. So what ailments are you?
Fine, Kenny. Thank you for asking. My ailment is sort of organic. It's not a physical ailment. It's a spiritual ailment. It's a psychological ailment. Now, I have a big question for you, Kenny.
Yes.
A serious question.
Yes.
Because I'm in
this
shitty weather right now, and I'm 65 years old, and I have a bad knee, and quite frankly, I'm tired of it.
Hmm.
My wife moved here to be with me. She would not live in Waterloo, Iowa otherwise. So we're going to sell the house, but she wants to go back to where she's from in Massachusetts. But that's where her parents live, and they're getting older, and I completely support the move. I understand. I lived here for my mother.
Yes.
We're going to move for her parents. I get it. But I'm trading this shitty climate for another shitty climate. And I'm really, if that's where I'm going to die, will I ever get a chance to be a whimpering, you know, climate snob like you again and complain when it's down to 65, which I'd enjoy?
Well, it's hard to know because we're not really sure when you're going to die.
Let's just put a ballpark figure. Do you know?
Speaking of which, can I switch to my mailman? I will come back to you. But speaking of.
Yeah, fine. Fine.
It turns out I have a hole in my retina.
You have a hole in your retina.
I have a hole in my retina.
That sounds like
And
I have a hole in my retina.
And they sent me to a specialist where they did all of these incredible exams. It's like psychedelic stuff. They flash lights in your eyes and stars and everything. And they put you in the room.
Right.
And it's like an amazing thing. And then they finally, and I'm a little nervous because I, you know, got sent to the specialist about a hot, and I had Googled what happens when you have a hole in your retina. You know, it could be serious.
What happens?
So anyhow, the guy looks at it and goes, hey, yeah, you got a hole, but it's healing. You're fine. And I'm like, well, how about that? He goes, but, you know, you are getting cataracts. I said, oh, fuck, really? I'm getting cataracts? He said, yeah. I said, well, what should I do? He said, well, no, it's so slow. He says, by the time you need an operation, you'll probably be dead. So I thought that was comforting, right? So the truth of the matter is,
that's how you took a left turn from my problem, and now we're bringing it back to I could die anytime.
Right.
I would like to point out, I was reading something that, you know, that in our lifetime, go back to 1960, the average male lifespan in America was 66 years old.
That's why Social Security was set that time. They thought everybody was going to be dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's sort of astonishing to think that the way I feel now is the way most people through history felt, going, oh, fuck, I'm done. I'm tired. I'm ready for death.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, this is a cheery start to the show. I can't wait to bring on our guests.
Well, you brought it up.
But Kenny, what do you think I should do? Do I just suck it up and die in Massachusetts?
Oh, well, I suppose there are a lot of people like Massachusetts. I don't know how far you're going to be from Boston.
Well, everything's.
Do you like chowder, Gary? Do you like chowder?
I like chowder. I like chowder. It would be on Western Mass, where it's particularly snowy, you know, in the mountains along the Connecticut River.
Oh.
You know?
The Connecticut River in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Well,
I believe that's the Western River of Massachusetts.
Don't you think by the time it reaches Massachusetts,
they ought to call it the Massachusetts River?
It should be called
But we digress. It just gets better from here, doesn't it?
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens.
All right.
Anything else you want to talk about?
There's a couple of things I want to talk about.
What? Politics?
Well, I don't know if we need to talk about it.
Biden
and Ukraine? I'll bring it up. I'll bring it up because I think, and I know we have our guest on and she's listening in, so I'd like to get her opinion on it as well. So I've been watching The Last of Us. Have you been watching?
Yeah, I've been watching. Yeah, I'm up to date.
It's all the rave. Everybody's loving it.
Right.
And one of the things they've been talking about was the gay episode.
Yeah.
The gay episode.
Right.
Now, And I don't know if it's a nature versus nurture thing, but I got to tell you, as liberal as I am, when I see two guys kissing, I cringe. It's uncomfortable.
Really?
Yeah. You don't cringe?
No, I really don't.
Really? I cringe a little bit. When
I
gotta look
make
away.
A mental
now, I see two
note.
Women. I see two women.
Right.
I'm totally fine with that.
You can see the pictures behind you. Of course, you're fine with that. But I make a mental I make a mental note because I think, how would I feel doing that as an actor? And I don't know how comfortable I would be as an actor. I don't know. I've never kissed a man. But you know, I make a note of it that, okay, that's a little bit different. But I have no reaction of being uncomfortable. In fact, I enjoy it, going, thank God. Wow.
Really?
I like to see gerbils made.
You know,
you've
evolved more than I've evolved.
Okay, Ken, I have a question.
Oh, excellent.
Okay, exactly. We're not taking questions yet, Tracy.
Tracy, come in, and then I'll introduce you. But go ahead. Come in.
Tracy, what is the question?
Okay, is there a food that you don't like? Like, what food do you... Okay, what is it?
Is this going to be like a psychological... If I say Frankfurters or something? And you're
it's a culinary Rorschach.
Here's
I love
question.
Frankfurters.
Is if you see someone on TV eating a food that you don't like...
Mm-hmm.
You also freak out.
No, I don't. The only time I freak out, the only thing that I freak out on and that I can't stand and that they're going overboard on it now is the vomiting on screen.
I'm the wrong person.
Everybody's doing how much can you vomit? How long can you vomit? How real can the vomit be? It's like, how graphic can you vomit? And that really bothers me.
Listen, I was an EP on Santa Clarita Diet. I cannot tell you how much time I spent working on vomit consistency. Vomit amount. We talked about it. I talked about vomit more during those three seasons than I have before or after. And I have babies. I had babies. And
I
still
have that
talk
thing
about-
where if I see people vomit, I feel like I need to vomit. It's like vomit empathy.
I don't want to talk about vomiting anymore until we introduce Tracy.
All right, introduce.
Because I think if we're going to go this far out on the vomit limb, we
think people
need to
know who this person is who's been studying vomit for the past 4 years.
Let me say one thing in relation. I don't actually like watching sex on screen. I don't like watching a heterosexual. I'm just like it. I never feel like it's something I need to see. Okay, you're married and you love each other. I'm never that comfortable with intimacy on screen, period.
But what about porn?
I don't watch porn.
You don't?
Ooh. No.
Ooh.
Does that make me straight odd? I don't like to watch.
Curious.
I don't like fake intimacy. I love sex and I love to have sex with my wife.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't need to see anybody else having sex. All right. Enough. On that note, let's bring on our guest.
Okay.
Tracy is one of those people that there are so many hats. I'm digging something up here. She wears so many hats that it's hard to know what to say. You were an executive that brought us Malcolm in the Middle, the Santa Clarita Diet. You brought us Louis C.K. So I didn't know what to say. So I just went to your own page. It might be your Twitter page or something. This is what Tracy Katsky Boomer has to say about herself. Producer, bass player, nose picker. Her pronouns, but I will literally answer to anything. Just please talk to me or about me.
Sounds
so on
like
that
a call
note,
for, calls for help. That sounds what, that's what that sounds like.
Please welcome Tracy Katsky Boomer. Hey, welcome to the show, Tracy.
Hi, thank you.
But I do want to talk about nose picking because I did think it was pretty bold of you to mention the nose picking right up front there because it is something that's kind of taboo. We all nose pick. Now, I would say Gary probably who doesn't watch porn or likes to watch, doesn't like to watch other people, he probably doesn't pick his nose. But for the rest of us, we pick our nose, but we just don't. People will not acknowledge it. But you came right out and said, you're a nose picker. And I admire you for that.
What someone's going to judge me for it? Let them judge me.
Everybody will judge you for it, Tracy.
It's real.
You don't nose pick in public, do you?
Hold on. Yes. If I have a situation. But let's go back for a second to the sex thing.
Yeah, good. Thank
Not
you.
Liking to watch sex on screen. I mean, look, we can go back to the nose picking after this, but I feel like that's an end we should tie up.
Mm-hmm.
ever in any circumstance? That's my first question. You don't like watching sex on screen ever in any circumstance? And number two, is this different than when you were through the years? Like as a 22-year-old, would you have a different take on it?
In other words, you're old.
Yes. Well, or as a teenager. And I watched, found my dad's Playboys, and you know, we'd have porn movies on 8mm that we would find in the basement. Absolutely enjoyed it. It showed me what it was, what everything looked like. It got me ready for what may really happen. But sex became more intimate to me as I became involved with human beings. Hmm. And so once it became intimate, that's where it belongs for me. And I just don't need to see it. I'd rather hear it in dialogue. I am a lovely man.
You are a lovely man.
But no, I mean, maybe I'm painting a picture of that. I'd love to see people holding hands and kissing. There's all sorts of ways to show we love each other without, you know, hammering.
Wait, so do you whack you, Wendell?
Well, of course I do.
So you whack you, you don't use porn to whack you, Wendell?
No. I think about my wife. I think about my.
Oh, no.
Unbelievable.
Really? Oh, God.
Well, yeah.
Whoa, I had no idea what a Puritan you were.
No, I'm not a Puritan. I just like it to be real. I don't like things I can't have.
You don't like it to be
real. I don't like
things that
don't exist. I don't like things that don't exist. I like.
Is that like in the Ted Lasso thing when the girl was getting all turned on when the guy was being emotional and talking about his feelings?
There you go.
Like, remember that scene?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, really?
Yeah, just all like right. that. Yeah, I don't know.
Now, I love to watch people pick their nose on camera and really get into it intimately.
Okay, but also here's the thing, boys. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. It's all about forwarding the story, mm-hmm. right? It's right. like if someone breaks into song, mm-hmm. you're like, right. is this going to forward the story or right. am I just right. going to listen to you sing a song about something? And then in one way, you probably are miserable. And in the other way, you're like, okay, I'll put up with this.
If it's
an example.
But I think seeing two people crawl under the covers tells me everything I need to know about that. I just don't need to see your face having an orgasm. I don't need to see his head disappear under the covers.
My face or anyone's? One.
Kenny's
someone.
Face. Kenny's face. Yeah. I just don't need to see that because to me it's revealed. And maybe maybe that's why my acting career never really took off.
Would you like to see the face I use when I come? Would you like to see that face?
God, no. God, okay. no.
Well, for the people in the podcast, I would. If it wasn't a podcast, I'd do it. Otherwise, you know, everybody
right.
can enjoy it. But okay.
Wait, but am I coming off weird here?
Well, you're not the usual. I think most people, porn is like the biggest business in the globe. I mean, there's no bigger business than people liking to watch other people having
if
sex.
If you're watching porn, and I know, look, I'm no fool. I know it exists. You can do a deep dive, put something up, /porn, and you're going to get miles, pages and pages of videos.
Right.
Let's say you're pleasuring yourself to mm-hmm. pornography, Kenny.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There are 5,900 guys with hair on their Wait. Back living in
What'd
their
you say,
mother's
Tracy?
Basement.
Just try to imagine what that would possibly be like.
Right. Just try to while you're doing that, Kenny, there's 5,900 guys living in their mother's basement jerking off to the same thing at that same moment.
Oh, well, that if
that
I thought of that,
you,
that would be the quickest
my brain
way to
would
flash
go
it.
There.
I'm not whacking off and going, and all of a sudden occurring to me that there's some fat people sitting on their couches in their mother's thing jerking along with me. I mean, that's a horrible thought. And now you've just ruined porn for me for the rest of my fucking
Good.
Life.
Good.
You evil, evil man.
I'm on a mission. Good.
Wow.
Tracy, your thoughts?
Oh, that's just a total buzzkill.
I just killed it all. Didn't
it's just horrible.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Well, it's real. You know what? It's real.
It's as real as nose picking. It happens. You have to know that's the truth.
Okay. All right. Well,
and you know those. And I know enough to know that there are POV porn things, right? Where it looks like your point of view, right? Do you enjoy that? Knowing that you could
Who
be
are we talking to?
Anybody?
Who
anybody, you know, I don't want. Let's just change the subject.
I'll be honest. I feel a little out of my league here, boys, because believe it or not, I'm not opposed to porn. I think everyone needs to do what they need to do, but it's just not my area of expertise. So I didn't know that some of those, I didn't know that there was a POV porn.
I can't tell you why I know.
But, it's unbelievable. Tracy, it's unbelievable. The categories of porn. I'm always amazed, not always amazed, but there are so many categories for like certain types of ethnicities in women. And it's always funny when I see, you know, when they have the choice, and I understand Asian women or whatever, or, you know, Indian women are beautiful and whatever the thing is. But everyone's, but when you see up there Canadian women, always like, really? Is somebody like clicking on Canadian women? Not, they're just like, but is there something erotic or special? Are they in a parka or something like that that turns people on?
Person wearing like the Google glasses that film?
Yeah.
Or is
that's the POV you're talking about.
Camera? Yeah. I'm just fascinated by this. Like,
well, I'll tell you what? The other thing that I don't get.
I'm fascinated for a second, and now it's like, okay, whatever. That's gross.
We're going to move on. I'm going to make my last point because I want the last word. But okay, the other thing that I don't get is that the extreme close-up on genitalia, why people find that so fascinating, that when having intimacy, you got to go in for that close-up macro camera. That is not a turn-on to me. That is gynecological, so I don't get that. But.
Okay, I agree. And then I have a question for you. Yes. Why do men send dick pics? Like, what's the plan?
Yeah, the plan is... There's the concept, and it's certainly perpetuated in porn. I mean, the biggest category in porn is, you know, BBC, which I don't know if you know what that is.
I don't.
Do you know what BBC
British
is?
Broadcasting. I don't know what
You know what BBC is? It's Big Black Cock. It's all about the size of the penis. And this goes
How
back-
did we get here, boys?
What?
How did we get here?
It was probably my fault, but I'm going to segue now. I have a segue.
Okay.
To get us out of this.
Okay.
Tracy may not like this, but one of the shows she was involved in, one of the people she knows very well,
I know where
got
you're
in
going.
Trouble because of his dick.
Masturbating in front of people?
Was canceled, and is now uncanceled. Louis C.K. is back, right?
Great. Is he? I don't know. I got to tell you, that was like, yeah.
Oh, you don't want to talk about that. Okay.
That was an editorialized.
But now he did a couple of different versions of his show. Which show were you involved in developing?
The show that you would have seen that I was involved in developing was Lucky Louie, which was the HBO.
Right. The HBO show.
All right.
Okay. Well, it was a terrific show.
It was terrific. I mean, he is terrific. I think he's
the issues came down, that's what was derailed as well, right? It was still in production, wasn't it?
No, his other show was.
His other show.
I think it was another show that was happening. Yeah.
You know, it was nice. That was actually where he did some of his best work. You know, he was a filmmaker a long time ago. And when he came with Lucky Louie, HBO had this agenda at the time, like, we're going to do multi-cameras. And it was like, we are? Okay, let's do it. That's weird. And he walked in and wanted to do The Honeymooners, but very modern. And I felt like, and very modern and very real. And by real, I mean real to his life. And I felt like for that, we did a great job. And it was a surprisingly popular show. It wasn't super helpful with the HBO audience and needs at the time, but people really liked it. It was very,
I liked it a lot.
It was very smart. Very smart.
Well, you developed Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah.
Correct? Is that where you met your husband? That's my hypothesis.
Let's say something though.
Okay.
I love the thought that I developed it, but in truth, I got a pilot script on my desk that was that script. So that wasn't like my brilliant thoughts or notes that developed it. That was my I was an executive on it, so I helped sort of get it made and things like that. But that was all creatively, that is all Linwood Boomer.
Well, speaking of Linwood Boomer, your husband, I know him. I don't know that he even remembers me, but he hired me for Night Court.
Oh, titty.
I can't even put a number on 96, 97, somewhere in there. I knew who he was because of Little House on the Prairie. And you know, he was a big star to me, you know, in those piercing blue eyes, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I was just flattered that he was nice to me. You know, I mean, he knew me and he was very nice. And I've just always thought the world of your husband.
Okay, so let's stop right here, Gary.
Okay.
You're fucking lovely. Why would someone not be nice to you? You're lovely. You're funny. You're a sweet, kind person. You don't even watch porn. Why would somebody not be nice to you?
That was a very nice thing for you to say, Tracy. I appreciate that very
well,
much.
Well, let's go back.
I remember you. I completely remember watching all your stuff on Saturday Night Live. I thought you were very funny. I think you're great. I know.
Yeah, he is, you know, great. Everybody always talks about you.
Ken and I have known each other for a long time.
Let's go into that. Okay. Go into you and Kenny. Right. And I want to hear the story.
Go ahead,
from
Tracy.
Her, not you,
I know
Kenny.
You want to talk about you, but talk about me.
I don't have much to say about me, but I have a lot to say about you.
Please share.
Ken hired me for one of the funnest jobs I've ever had. We didn't do a lot of work.
No.
But we had a great time. Way back in the 90s when there was a lot of the stand-up comics with brick wall shows, you know, like Evening at the Improv and all of those kind of things. And Ken and his partner had a idea to do a show like that, except with sketch performers. So they hired me to kind of go out and be a scout and bring people in and film them doing sketches.
Give them some of the names of the people you brought in. Some of the names of people brought in. Will Ferrell came in.
And Sherry O'Terry.
Sherry O'Terry came in.
Your original cheerleader thing.
Chris Kattan.
Before, these are all before they were, when they were groundless.
Give me a date on this, because this is after Comics Rip Live.
It was a Tuesday. It was a Tuesday. Does that help?
What year? What year, Kenny? What year, smartass?
I don't fucking know. It was last century.
95? Okay, 95. That sounds right.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so long ago.
Yeah, it was so long ago.
I remember we had, and they'd already shot a season, I think, of Mr. Show, but we had a tape of Bob Odenkirk's original one-man show that he did in Chicago.
Yes. You know what? Those tapes, I can't believe, Tracy, I don't have any of those tapes. We've taped all of those.
I have them in my garage, I think.
Oh my God, you do? In what format?
Like VHS. I should.
Oh, on VHS. Okay.
You know, I thought about it like a week ago when you were like, would you do a podcast? I was like, and I was thinking, I was like, I should probably see if I even still have those tapes, but I didn't.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know if you have some of them, because those were the first time I think some of those people got on tape.
Oh, yeah. Well,
Tracy, you developed Bob's show after that, didn't you? Didn't you develop a show with Bob Odenkirk?
I developed a pilot with Bob Odenkirk. I worked with him a little on Mr. Show, which was
on Mr. Show, right? Okay.
Favorite things ever. And I think the reason Kenny hired me for that other job, but with Bob on his show, which I did a pilot with him at Fox that was really fun and didn't go anywhere. And then, which show specifically are you talking about? Because I've worked with Bob.
Right, he's done a couple of different pilots. Yeah.
Well, his, you know, I just knew that.
Fantasticness. God, I wish I could take any credit for whatsoever, but he's just, you know.
Well, he's someone that I've always kept my, when I was at Saturday Night Live, Bob Odenkirk was just this kid who he ran up to me in the lobby at 30 Rock and handed me scripts. And I said, hey, kid, I can't even read these or I'll be in trouble legally. And now, given what's become of him, I wish to God I would have gotten in trouble and just taken the scripts. I mean, so I've always kept my eye on Bob.
Well, you know,
and
did you know
and
Sarah
Mr. Show?
Did you know Sarah Silverman?
I met her, but I never knew her. Oh, Tracy, yeah.
Because when Tracy was working with us, she was very friendly with Sarah. Are you still as friendly with Sarah today?
She was my roommate.
Yeah, she was his roommate. So that's kind of how I do want to talk about that as far as, you know, when Tracy came to me, she was already kind of she was part of this like pack of comics, young comics, even though she was not a performer. She was not stand up, but she knew every single comic. So actually, let's talk about that. How did you go and just find your way into the comedy community?
Well, I was very poor. I was in my early 20s, and what I found was I had a horrible breakup with a boyfriend. And what I found was if you have a job, I had sort of a crappy internship in development where I made maybe $200 a week, like just some insanely low amount of money, and was living, I think still at the time, with my dad, who happened to live in LA, which is, my luck. And so what I found was if you called and RSVP'd to the flyer, they would let you into these places for free. And sometimes people would buy you food or drinks. So I just RSVP'd to everything. I was like, I will go to every show. There's not a show I won't go to. I will read every script anyone sends me. I will go to any show anyone invites me to. So I started going to all these shows. And, I was young enough that I could stay out till 1 or 2 in the morning and still show up for work the next day. It wasn't a problem. So I would go out to these shows and then I'd be sitting around the bar. And I don't know if you guys have ever met comics. Often they are a touch, I don't want to use the word needy because that feels derogatory. But let's say they enjoy people that enjoy them. And
Yes.
I would be like, you're brilliant. And they would be like, I'm going to buy you dinner now. And I'd go, this is a great situation. Everybody's going to win right here. Like, I get to hang out with this person I think is brilliant and eat. And so I found that that, in addition to actually getting to know some of the agents and managers that were in the same position as me, just we were sort of junior people trying to make our way in the world that are now some of them very big and fancy, but we're just trying to find our way. And so that's how, I inadvertently built up this incredible knowledge base of, at the time, every comic that was working through and around Los Angeles, and every writer that was trying to get a job staffed in comedy. And it was really mostly because I had a very sad life and
Well, no, but I
Oh,
mean,
come on.
no, but besides the sad life, which is true of one of the reasons it's important to be very young when you're in this business, is that, yeah, if you hang around and keep hanging around, people will start talking to you and go, like, hey, I have nothing to do. You have something to do? I have nothing to do. And next thing you know, you're out having, at what was the deli right next to the Laugh Factory? What was it called?
Greenbutts.
Yeah,
Greenbutts.
Greenblatt's. You'd hang
Oh,
out
Greenbutts, right.
till 3 o'clock in the morning, but you had to be young. But yeah, you get to a
Yeah,
certain
well,
point
I
if you go,
couldn't
hey,
do it now. I go to bed at
now.
7:30. I mean, there's not much that's happening at the bar at 7:30.
When I turned 27, I had sort of worked my way into getting a real job by the time I was 27, which is how I know that I was with Ken more like in 1990, a little earlier than that. I remember one day I stayed out till 2:30 in the morning with a bunch of friends drinking and being an idiot. And the next morning, I was late for work and I was fairly useless in the morning. And it was a real turning point. I was like, oh, I guess
It's
that was
called
the
off.
day.
It's
Like,
called authentic learning.
yeah,
Yes.
like, oh, I guess I can't do that anymore.
Hey, I have a question for you. That's not a question, because I'm obsessed. I follow you now on Twitter, Tracy Katsky
Oh, I'm
Boomer.
so sorry.
She a pinned tweet. Marriage is hard, you guys, and anyone that says that it isn't has never been married to me. Would you like to elaborate a little bit on that? Are you
I think
difficult?
that speaks for itself.
Okay, it speaks for itself. In case it isn't
No,
obvious, right?
I will elaborate
Please.
because it was during, I actually, that was during a point when a lot of people, you were getting a lot of articles like, people were admitting like parenting is hard and anyone that says that it isn't is never whatever. And I
Yeah,
just
never
thought,
had a child, right?
relationships are hard. And I don't know, I just thought that was funny.
Well, no, there is a lot of things that, and that, when Tracy commented that when we worked together, it was a lot of fun, that we probably had more laughs than we did work, which is true. Because Tracy is really hysterically funny. And you see that on her Facebook page.
Oh, yeah.
What was the one that I read about? I don't, is anybody missing a neck? Because I have two.
Hard to
Yeah.
get all guys.
I see a little book. Here's a Tracy. In case it isn't obvious, I'm an expert on basically everything, and I'm not sure why the government isn't even reaching out on pressing current issues like UFOs and inner child work and bass modes in indie music and skillet cookies. You have a free association kind of...
Anybody interested in more of Tracy's witticisms can contact us here at the Gary and Kenny Show. So, Tracy, how many followers do you have?
Actually, I don't know. At one point, I had, like, I don't know, maybe 2,500, which I thought was great for someone that is not famous and has never really tried to be famous.
No, I'm telling you. No, your Facebook page, those things you're posting, are very funny.
Yeah, hey, if I try to friend you, will you friend me back?
I don't usually on Facebook friend a lot of strangers because that's weird. And then like you put up a picture of your.
Well, are you saying you're not going to friend me? Well, won't you friend me now? You'll friend me now,
yeah,
right?
I will. Hold on. Yeah.
Tracy. So besides, there's a lot more stuff that's very funny that she writes, and I do encourage people to go to her Twitter page. And if she gets any more followers, I want to get a piece of the action. But nevertheless, let me ask, Tracy, what are you doing now?
Let's see. I'm in a band. It's very fun. And I'm a band.
I'll tell people. The name of the band is?
The name of the band is The Drama Dolls.
Which coming from it's not the Comedy Dolls. How come it's not the Comedy Dolls? You're a comedy girl. Should have been the Comedy Dolls, not the Drama Dolls.
But the three of us original band members had all been in other bands that were had different levels of what we felt at the time was unnecessary drama. And we got together and started playing because we were like, we couldn't. We needed an outlet that was no drama. So then we call ourselves. I don't know.
This has been a lot. You've been doing this for a few years now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You made any money?
Original music.
Original music. Every once in a while, we'll throw in a cover. We have actually made some real money, which is kind of crazy to me. I know. Every time.
Are you on Spotify?
We are on Spotify. It's Drama Dolls LA. DramaDollsLA.com. And there's another band called Drama Dolls that isn't us that I don't know how to tell you to do that. I'm old, guys. I don't know how to tell people to do that. And
you're younger than we are.
We'll help you.
Drama Dolls, there you are. All right, I have an unanswered question. I want to go back to this. Okay, so you and Boomer, your eyes meet. Give me some of that. Give me the Boomer story.
We were, I got the pilot script for Malcolm in the Middle, and I drove to my boss, you know, it was back before you could just email something to someone. So I drove to my boss's house and said, you have to read this tonight. And then we met with him. I was dating somebody else at the time, and he was married to somebody else at the time. So we just started working together, and I found him terrifying. If you don't know him, he's a powerful man that is not necessarily the warmest person when you first meet him. And I found this very daunting. And so then, you know, we went through the development process, and it was just that's a whole other story for people that are interested in that. And then we got the pilot picked up, and I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna have, my boss said, you gotta be in every casting session, and I want you on the set for every single shot of this pilot. And I was like, oh no, I'm gonna have to get this guy to like me. This is horrible. So I started bringing him coffee, and we started smoking. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to have to woo him just to be nice to me, because I found him terrifying. And like, he would be so horrified at this story, at this version that I'm telling. And then, so then we started working together, but my company had a policy of not dating the people that you worked with. So then he was like, well, we should probably be dating because there's a lot of chemistry between us. And I was like, no, absolutely not.
Linwood came right out. He was feeling this. Now, you're in a relationship and he's married when he said that.
Oh, a very compressed timeline.
Okay.
In truth, this was sort of over a year or so. God, I'm not doing a good job of telling this story.
No, I'm enjoying it more than watching sex.
Have you ever met anybody else in the world named Linwood?
Never.
Whose last name is Boomer? I mean, I always thought that was the greatest name that was ever created, is Linwood Boomer. I mean, you got to be somebody if your name's Linwood Boomer.
Apparently, most of the other people that are named Linwood are Black. And he tells the story of every time someone would come in for an audition, if they only saw his name and knew nothing about him, they would always be disappointed that he was a white guy. They'd walk in and be like, hey, and so see.
That is a sign of it. Yeah. Wow. Hey, let's talk about Night Court, because now it is back.
And have you seen a new one?
No, have you? Has Linwood?
People love it.
Has Linwood seen it?
We love it. We keep meaning to, and then we just sort of have playing video games.
I watched one. I thought it was very funny, actually, but it had an annoying laugh track. It didn't need to be as stimulated as it was artificially.
It's just interesting to me that this is what we're doing. I mean, we'll get into the state of comedy, which is, I guess the reason they're bringing these titles back is maybe the only people who are really watching TV are older people who are kind of relate to these shows from the past, right?
I think it's very, very, very hard to launch a comedy right now. It's very hard to launch a show because there's so many shows that it's hard to get any attention for any specific one. And so if you have anything to go off of, if you have anything, name recognition or anything like that,
you're trying. Yeah, but I think it has something to. But I don't know if maybe. I mean, it is amazing how the streaming services are bringing back shows that did skew old. My friend's show Criminal Minds is a big hit on Paramount. Who would have thought that? You know, a lot. So you do have that. But this also begs the question: if Linwood is ever going to think about it, is Malcolm in the Middle redo it?
It's not because he hasn't been asked.
Really? Okay.
Well, of course he has.
All right. Well, he might be now that you have this big hit with, Night Court.
Well, maybe.
He ran Night Court for a year or two, but he didn't. It wasn't his creation.
He had an association.
I think the problem with him doing another Malcolm is that was a pretty outstanding situation where what happened was once we got that picked up, no one was paying attention to it. We had a 13 episode mid-season order and it was the only single camera show. It was either the only or one of the only two single camera shows on the air. It was also a family show, which was not exciting at the time. People were not into family shows. It was all sort of 20 something, like, let's make it look like Friends. So we got left completely alone while we were making it. And then it was when Doug Herzog, that angel straight from heaven, went to Fox and was just not a big noter. Like, he just didn't give a lot of notes, but he hadn't developed it. So he didn't have that executive thing of like, I'm going to tell you a lot of things to do now with their script and show. I don't remember if he got fired or he quit that job. So, and then
I think he left Fox. He wasn't happy.
Got that job. And then she brought me over as head of comedy. So suddenly, Linwood is no one giving him notes, frankly.
You hear that a lot.
Like, we'd sort of try, but every now and then I'm like, that's dumb. Or not really. Yeah, but no. Give a little note here and there, and that was, he just did his own thing. And how are you going to get that again now? Like, how's he going to go and do something now where
wasn't the appeal of streaming services the fact that they just gave you money and no notes?
I don't know if that's true anymore. That was totally the case. Santa Clarita Diet was such a brilliant, I mean, it was sort of like a moment in time where it was before.
What service was that on?
That was Netflix. And I think we weren't the first internal Netflix production, but we were one of the first for sure that didn't have an outside studio. So, you know, we just didn't. they hadn't formed all the systems yet. Like they did, they would be hiring people as we needed, you know, like, we need to figure out music for the show. Well, we don't have a music department and we don't have anyone working there. So hold on, let us hire some people. They would run, they would do these PowerPoint presentations about how the streaming service worked because none of us had any idea. And they would bring in me and Victor Fresco to watch the, to watch these PowerPoints, and they would look at us like, now, does that make sense?
Right,
does that
make,
and we're like, oh, we're their guinea pig, we're their tester audience. They don't know what they're doing at all. This is hilarious. And on a lot of the deals, we ended up sort of helping them just because they were brand new and they hadn't done a lot of those kind of deals before. So, you know, we ended up helping them set some templates, and now these places are huge. I mean, now the streaming services are-
they're spending more money, so they're giving them notes.
It's not even spending more money. It's that they are a bigger service and there's more people that have jobs that need to participate.
Who need to justify them as well.
Yeah, I know. Because it is, I mean, I don't know how interesting it is to people, but it is amazing to me that shows that become very successful in the day when notes were very, very much of a process. It was like, it was understood. If whatever show you were doing, there was the current department, which was in charge of your show. And as you were doing the show, you would get notes. And the notes were unbelievably horrible. A lot of 90, there were people who had writers' backgrounds, and there's some people you respected, but they were more few and far between. They were the exceptions, not the rule. But the rule generally was these people who weren't funny and would give you the most ridiculous notes possible.
Yeah.
And it really was only the ones, and only the ones that the showrunners that were strong enough and had the vision enough to fight them on it or just do what they wanted to do anyhow were the ones that survived. But generally it was, it's amazing.
You know, I used to, when I was at Fox, we sort of thought about it in terms of success. Like if someone was unbelievably successful, if they had a big hit show, they wouldn't take any notes.
Right.
And then if they had a show that was clearly going to get canceled because no one was watching it, they wouldn't take notes. It was sort of everyone in the middle that were a little bit screwed because I'll tell you guys, having worked a lot at networks and sort of in that corporate structure, here's the tough part. These are all a bunch of people that their job is to deliver a product to their boss that is a successful thing. So as much as it feels like they're just kind of these people you have to deal with, their job often rests on if a show is successful.
Mm-hmm.
So they genuinely do want what is best for the show.
Mm-hmm.
And when they give notes, they are genuinely saying things that they want to make it better. I think the best people really at being executives are the C students, because the A students do all the things like they're on it. They have their notes and they make sure they get taken and they read them right away and have a good page and everything's really well thought out and they talk to those showrunners and get their notes taken. And then there's the C students, like I was when I was an executive, which is like, yeah, I read it. And someone didn't take all my notes, I'd be like, oh, well, I'll call them later. Like I just didn't, you know, because to some extent you just have to trust the force and trust the universe and let people do what they want to do. If I'm the smart person on a show and I'm the executive, that is terrible. That's terrible. If you're the smartest person in the room, my God, everything's, you might as well just quit right now. That's a disaster.
Well, there's another type of person who was in current was the people who, they didn't really want to, they didn't see their job being with the network. They saw their job, ultimately, they wanted to be a comedy writer too. So that there was also that degree of the people who were in current who would want to say, would you read my script? Because I had that a couple of times where they would suddenly give a script. And
that's awkward.
So you had that type as well. But anyhow, So Tracy, now what do you think of comedy now, Tracy? Is it funny still? Is comedy funny?
You know, that was one of your editorial pauses again.
I'll tell you what my real problem is with comedy.
This is what I wanted to hear.
There's so many shows right now, and they're so good. There's so many good shows on the television that people are really getting a lot from. There's so many of them. And often with a comedy, there's not a huge reason for existence. It's not like people are walking away from it going, I feel moved.
Yeah, right.
So it doesn't have the same kind of emotional weight. So then you go, okay, well, is it really funny? And there's a few shows that still work in those categories. But if you see something now, like when I'm trying to watch something and it's a show that's just, it's a B, you know, it's just mediocre, and it's not bad. Like, it's certainly not bad, but it's not great. It's like, I am so behind. I have this many shows to watch. Like, if something's a B, I won't make space for it.
Right.
And if I don't have like this incredibly intense emotional connection, I won't make space for it. So I end up seeing things like, did you see that John Cena show, Peacemaker, I think it was?
More hysterical. I love that show. I love that show.
It's hysterical, but it's not a quote comedy. It's just happens to be hysterical. Right. And I kind of feel like that's where the future's going. But the thing that strikes me as sad is the way that the business is set up right now. Comedy and drama are thought of as very separate. So it's hard for people. It's a little bit harder to navigate for people that want to do both in one show. Like, if you want a funny show that also has a lot of dramatic weight to it, you kind of have to talk to
Ted Lasso. Is Ted Lasso a comedy?
Well, there's an example.
To me?
If you put it in a category, it's not a puff. It's a show,
no, right?
I guess is a comedy, but there's no expectation it's going to make you laugh out loud, is there?
Right. You know what show's great? Hacks. Have you seen Hacks?
Fantastic.
I haven't seen Hacks.
It's unbelievable.
Fantastic.
That's Lorraine Newman's daughter, by the way, Gary.
Really?
Yep.
Listen,
it's one of those on my list that I haven't gotten to. Hacks. All right, I'm writing it down. No, or Facebook friends, you've given me a show.
Well, no, I do want to pursue. Can I pursue?
Sure.
Go ahead, okay. Pursue.
I'm pursuing. Do you go to comedy clubs?
Almost never. I only go to comedy clubs when it's a good friend of mine. But,
so
Ken, both of my kids are away at school, so now I theoretically could go to comedy clubs.
I want to go with you. We should go to a comedy club together.
I'll go anytime. I love comedy clubs. I just have, like, I've had a life where it wasn't.
Well, isn't comedy the place you see stand-up comedy now, TikTok or YouTube?
I don't watch a ton of stand-up.
So you could you name who's happening now in stand-up comedy?
Probably not. Right.
Because that was our job. That was it back in the day.
But also, what's happening even mean anymore? Like, the world is so big and fragmented. Like, what does that even mean?
There are big celebrity comedians out there that we don't know their names. Big.
Well, but there's also, like, for example, there's comic stuff like the Try Guys, like those guys, and like sort of Danny Gonzalez and Curtis Connor and Drew Gooden and sort of that. There's that whole school of the YouTube guys that aren't necessarily stand-up, and they aren't necessarily, it's almost more like a Seth Meyers thing than a stand-up thing.
But there are people on, there are stand-up specials on Netflix. They're doing more and more.
Jim Gaffigan is doing fine. Nate Bargatze is my new favorite.
I know, but those guys were around when we were. I mean, Jim Gaffigan.
That's what I was going to say. That's
been around forever. That's not
the up and coming.
Nate hasn't been around
comic.
That long, has he?
He's fucking brilliant.
He's blowing up now.
You know what? The comedy shows I miss, and I don't. When I thought this was laugh out loud funny, I would like them to do a new version of Mr. Ed. My mother, the car.
Okay, let me tell you something.
Yes.
I was part of a development team that was trying to do a new version of Mr. Ed.
Really?
Really? So this is a good idea.
Well, right?
Throw my dismissal away.
Here's the really hard part, is figuring out the line between self-awareness and presentational. Like, it's very silly. It's just very silly in a way that people don't necessarily accept now. And
they don't, right, like, exactly.
How do you do it without being winky, like winking at the camera, like, huh, right?
Right, they put peanut butter in the horse's mouth, and that was a special effect we were fine with.
Right,
then.
But the thing,
you
the
couldn't
word
do
you,
that now.
The word you used is exactly right. I loved, as a kid, those shows that were just outright make you laugh silly. I love Silly. I loved Abbott and Costello. They had a sitcom, which, by the way, Jerry Seinfeld says his show with Larry David was kind of developed around the the Costello show. Yeah. That kind of thing where the only intention, even in the Honeymooners, their only intention, except for, you know, maybe that moment at the end, was for the laughs. Just laughs, 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 laughs.
Right,
Silly.
But that exists. Like, did you see, I mean, if you think about, like, I got two kids in a teenage, late teenage demographic. That stuff still very much exists. It's just not made for people our age anymore.
Oh, okay. Well, just give me an example.
The way I see it is it's sort of the idea. It's the meta of the meta of the meta of the meta. It's like,
I got to write this down.
it's a self-awareness thing that is past. It's a self-aware that is making fun of the self-aware paradigm of being self-aware that is okay. So far beyond the thing. I know it because my kids will send me memes that I'm like, okay, I have to dissect them. I have to think about them. Like, what? And I know it's funny. Like, I can feel that, you know, when you feel in your stomach, like, oh, that's funny. But you have to really, like, get yourself in that.
What was silly for
you? Why? You want to hear it?
Yes.
I worked at Nickelodeon for a while.
Yes, I remember that.
Which I don't recommend. Which, if you are in a certain demographic, those were sort of the comedy Bibles for kids that age. Mm-hmm. And I think that style of comedy, of being random, because that's what you could really do on Nickelodeon, is what permeated that culture. And so that's what they've taken with them. So there's a certain randomness to comedy now that is less linear and less narrative. And it really suits itself to something like TikTok or Instagram, where it's very quick. It's just like a mm-hmm. snap of a moment. But it's the juxtaposition of things that have no reason to be together. It is the notion of response to something that is just very arbitrary. God, I'm making things sound hilarious with my.
I guess, just going back for me, it's just, I do miss. There was a type of comedy which was very slapstick, which was very vaudeville, which was just outright silly. Maybe they are doing it, silly stuff, but I don't know. Are they doing that kind of slapstick, you know, stuff that I used to laugh out loud at, you know, the Three Stooges comedy?
I don't think so. I tried to indoctrinate my kids with Three Stooges and they didn't find it funny whatsoever. And this was at any point in their life. I think it's very different. I think it's more arbitrary. I don't think they require the traditional first act resolve and second act, you know, or any of that.
I'm sorry that silly is gone.
It's very arbitrary.
I'm sorry that silly is gone. That's my opinion.
It's just silly. It's a different kind of silly. Yeah, it's slightly more cerebrally silly. And even then,
it can be cerebral. Well, once you make silly cerebral, it is no longer silly.
Funny or Die has been around for a long time, but that was really, for my kids, the template of this is funny. You have a landlord who's 3 years old demanding her fucking rent from Will Ferrell, that's what my kids find funny. Yeah. That's the absurdity that they find funny.
Today,
that's their slapstick.
If you go to the People Magazine definition, what we used to use for the paradigm, which is, you know, it's either interesting people in regular situations, or I'm sorry, extraordinary people in regular situations, or normal people in extraordinary situations. So, you know, you have like the world's most normal guy and he's surrounded by aliens, or an alien.
Oh, I was going to pitch that. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, where do we
fall
in? I don't
know why people aren't doing shows about aliens. Clearly, I don't know why that's not more of a topic. It's driving me crazy.
Well, it's something you bring up quite a lot, judging from your Twitter feed.
Yeah, you know why? Because no one's dealing with it. That's why. I have a theory that, like, aliens landed, but it was in 2019 when we were dealing with, like, the height of all the craziness. You know, the pandemic is just coming in, and then the election. And then, you know, all the craziness, and people are like, oh, there's alien craft, and everyone's like, we don't have mental space for this right now. We can't.
And they just ultimately said, fuck it, forget it, we're gone, right?
And they're like, take me to your leader. Right. And everyone's like, we don't have time to take you to our leader because we're in a big fight about who our leader is. And we don't have space for you, sir.
Let's pitch it.
Hey, we're going to let you go. I got to go out and chip ice. I have to go out and chip ice.
I'm Tracy, so sorry. Thank you so much for doing this. I hope you had a good time.
Oh, I think it's wonderful. And thank you for friending me. You know, I put up a lot of political posts. Hopefully you'll enjoy some of what I put up. Kenny is always amusing on Facebook.
I've been a fan of you since I saw you on Saturday Night Live. I'm excited you're very kind. As a friend.
I'm delighted. We will share these little stories and videos and your funny little statements. I've really enjoyed it. Say hi to Linwood. I was Judge Jimmy Cleaver. I did magic on the show. They taught me to do magic so I could compete with Harry. And it was all basically almost live.
Sure, Harry loved that.
Well, Harry taught me how to do these things.
But I don't know if I'm allowed to tell him.
Tracy, thank you for being our guest, first of all. Thank you all for watching or listening to The Gary and Kenny Show. We're on all the popular podcast platforms. We are on DBNA streaming TV. And if you go to our YouTube channel, The Gary and Kenny Show, give us a thumbs up. We'd appreciate it very much. Till next time, so long.
Yes, and no thumbs down, even if you want to.
No thumbs down. Yeah,
thumbs up. Yeah. All right. Thank you, everybody. Goodbye.